Hello and welcome to PFF Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your host, Ian Harditz, and we have a very special edition of the pod today. I know we've been ripping through team previews basically the better part of last month. We're going to continue to do so into early July, but as we talked about with all these previews, there's a lot of unknown there, specifically with the injuries going on that seems to impact every single team and some of the players we're currently looking at drafting. Let's face it, I'm not a doctor. If you're listening to this podcast, you probably aren't. Maybe if you are, maybe you are. Like, that's dope. It's a great job. You're probably making bank. Like, that's awesome if you're a doctor listening to this. But I'm not. And because of that, I like to bring actual doctors on to try to tell us what's actually going on with some of these injured guys. So if you've been a fan of the podcast, you've heard him before. Doctor of physical therapy. The man works for the Minnesota Twins and in his spare time happens to give some of the best fantasy analysis out there over with the fine folks at Fantasy Points. None other than Dr. Evan Porras at FB Injury Doc on Twitter. As you surely know, make sure you check out his new newsletter, NFL Injury Updates. I'm a recent subscriber. It is very much free and it's pretty great, Evan. So thanks for coming on, man. And thanks for just being you, because seriously, man, put out some of the best content out there in terms of injury analysis. Great day to be great, man.
I appreciate you having me, man. This is nice. I told you that I wanted Dwayne on and I needed to ask him a few questions. I might ask you, we can get to that, but I really appreciate that introduction. It's nice. It's nice to be here. Nice to unplug, talk some fantasy, some relatively lower stakes stuff, right? I know a lot of people still put some money down. I get that. You're probably one of them. And I see a couple championship belts back behind you. But I do know that we're going to hit on a lot of hot button topics and understand that I'm just trying to paint some context. You get in trouble for the PFF graphics. I get in trouble for stating, this is going to sound douchey, a fact, being like, oh, well, hey, like, you know, Cam Akers could actually just be it. Like, this could just be Cam Akers. And people are raging in my mentions. Like, how dare you imply that now he's going to be average? It's like, I mean, okay. Like, we'll get to that, Ian. I have a question for you to begin with, though.
What's up?
You drank a Pacifico. That's should be, I don't know. Anything Pacifico is fine. Personally, I'm Modelo or potentially Dos Equis. Okay. So that's sort of that's my wheelhouse. You also had a burrito. I need to know what kind of burrito it was. And my third question, so I guess I had three. I said one question. My third question is, why the hell is Dwayne's bookie a Girl Scout and why does she make house calls? I get so confused. You guys have been ripping through these team previews. I've been listening. When you have to make a decision for some reason, you've both resorted to saying, if there's a Girl Scout that comes knocking on the door, I'm very confused. I need some explanations. Is this Girl Scout beating your kneecaps when you don't pay up? I just need a lot of explanations, man.
Okay, let's start with the Girl Scout. Originally, when Dwayne and I were doing these podcasts, as we've been doing now for a good year and a half, we would have a question or it was a real tight start sit decision. I'd be like, all right, Dwayne, gun to your head, who are you picking here? And he's like, geez, like, way to really put the pressure on there, man. Like, getting dark in here. So we're like, okay, let's ease things up a little bit. There's not a gun to your head. So we're like, all right, what if a Girl Scout just comes to your door and asks you this question? But then she pulls out a gun. So it got dark. It got even darker from that point on. But now, instead of using the phrase gun to your head, we're trying to keep things a little bit lighter. And we're implying a Girl Scout walks to your door to ask those questions. So not saying it's the best method, but we're going to stick with it for the time being. That explains the Girl Scout thing. And I absolutely love Cincinnati's finest El Toro Mexican establishment across the street from me. I literally go there probably two or three times a week, man. And I freaking guzzle Pacifico because it is fantastic. I'm cool with Modelo too. When it's fight night at the Harditz household, we got the UFC on. I got to give the sponsor some love. Give me a good Modelo or 12. But in addition to that, Got the burrito, manager special, steak, no onions, douse that shit in cheese. I will eat there every single
day. Onion, not an onion guy.
No cebollos, right? Isn't that how we're going to go with it? Cebollos, isn't that onions in Spanish?
Cebolla.
Ah, cebolla. See, that's close. Probably why. That's close why. Enough. That's why they look at me like I'm a jackass every time I say that, I'm sure. So I'll work on that pronunciation. And
you go how to say that?
Sometimes
you do look at you froze on the screen, but I know that you go up there and say cebollos. That's okay. Hey, you're trying, and they eventually get it right. Like they get what you're saying.
I go there so much. I have the bartender just look at me and he goes like, big one. I'm like, yep, you know me, you got this. But
you love those relationships. You love that.
Okay, Evan, as much as I could talk to you about beer and Mexican food for next hour, let's take advantage of this and find out some goodness with these injuries here. Because again, it's just one podcast after another where we're almost forced to like just kind of guess what's going on. Happy to have you here, man. So I want to go through quarterback, running back, wide receiver, and tight end. You know, we have, do have some bigger picture topics to go through, but feel free to be brief when we're talking about guys with the same injuries. So first off, man, let's talk about Jameis Winston and the ACL. Low-key had himself a pretty damn nice season last year. Now, it was an offense that was not letting him really, you know, be the Jameis that we saw in 2019, most run-heavy group while he was under center. But Edwin, he comes back. The Saints have committed to him. He is a starting quarterback. There was some talk about him being in the brace in practice. I want to say there was a report saying limping around. How much of a concern is his comeback from the ACL? Is that just normal recovery? What are your overall thoughts on Jameis just being back to himself by week one?
No, you know, there aren't a lot of, unless he has a setback, there aren't a lot of concerns for Jameis, especially since we know he's not necessarily Josh Gordon out there. He's not fast. He's not a guy that's going to take off and run every single time. I know maybe he's got a little bit of that every now and then. But when it comes to every NFL study ever done, and if I were good, I would know it off the top of my head, but I'm not that good. And there is a big systematic review. There are actually a couple at this point that show, and other people have validated, ACL injuries do not impact quarterbacks in a negative way. That's just from like the last 30, 40 years, we've looked at every performance metric, which probably will translate to fantasy points. And there aren't really very many variables that you can look at to say that are negatively impacted. When you look at his timeline specifically, he had the surgery the week of November 11th, 2021. And that would put him approximately a full cleared, full return by mid-August, if not probably by week one. You have to remember that these quarterbacks can come back a lot sooner because it's a lot more of a cerebral position than it is a physical, you know, agility. You're of course not going to let a quarterback go back without doing return to sport testing and getting them to where they need to be. But in terms of Jameis specifically, he'll have enough time. And unless he has a setback, he should be ready. The brace that he was running in around, I mean, at that time, I think he was like 6 or 7 months or something. I don't really know. I'd have to go back and do the math, but when he was in that brace, like that was to be expected. Like dudes will wear, Joe Burrow was wearing a brace last June too. Everybody sort of made a big deal about it. It's not a big deal. This is the other thing where people were raging my mentions about Ian. It's like, I'm like, no, like this is normal. Right. But then people like want something to panic about. So it's kind of a weird thing. I don't think you should worry about Jameis. I do think he's going to be back by week one, barring a setback or something that we don't know about.
Especially, I think that first point you made, we're like, he's never been a quarterback that's just completely relying his mobility play in and play out. So would like to hope that he'll be fine. Sounds like that things are moving firmly in that direction, sticking at the quarterback position. Baker Mayfield and Jimmy Garoppolo. These are two guys coming back from, Baker's got the labrum, Jimmy's got the shoulder. Who knows what team they're going to be on by the time week one comes around. I think in Baker's case, especially though, like we aren't giving enough credit to the fact that he played through that and a laundry list of other injuries, man. I know everyone just wants to hate Baker and Carson Wentz these days. And, you know, if that's your thing, then go ahead. But I do wonder with guys like Baker, like Zeke, some of these other guys that we saw unsuccessfully play through their injuries. Like if Baker just stopped playing after he tore his labrum in week two, like our most recent sample size would have been a good 10 games of him like playing great football. Like 2020 happened, people. We can't just ignore that for Baker. Same thing with the back half of 2018. So how, because I know, I believe it was to his left shoulder, so it wasn't the throwing shoulder, but how serious was that injury for Baker? And then moving on to the shoulder with Jimmy, like how different are their, I guess, return to play timelines?
Yeah, so I think Jimmy had surgery roughly March, right? If I'm not mistaken, I think the first week of March roughly is when he had surgery. So I think that you asked about Baker first, so we'll get to him. His surgery to basically tighten up his capsule from, you know, I'm operating based off of what I remember that injury being of his left non-throwing shoulder. Mm-hmm. It's not something to scoff at, but once you get it repaired, it shouldn't necessarily impact him again. Essentially what happens, and we'll get to T. Higgins, a very similar thing happened to Baker Mayfield that happened to T. Higgins. So they basically went in, they sewed it down, they made sure everything was tight so that it wouldn't continue to redislocate. And he should be fine moving forward as long as he doesn't have another super awkward collision the way that he did when he landed with his whole arm outstretched. I think that the one thing Baker Mayfield doesn't get a lot of credit for, and trust me, I'm not by any means like a Baker stan. Like, I think I'm neutral at the, really, if I had to say, like, I'm neutral about Baker. The one thing that people do think they discredit a little much is how he played through that injury. I've seen a lot of people, athletes, play through a shoulder instability. And to them, they just get to the point where like, oh, yeah, it's fine. I'm just going to play through this. That's brutal, man. Like there are instances that shoulder probably came out while he was rolling over in bed. Like that's how bad that shoulder was. I know he played in the sling and the brace, but that thing was not pinned down at all. So just imagine psychologically, even if not physically, taking a snap, getting under center and being chased by freaking, you know, whoever it is, Jadeveon Clowney, right? Thinking to myself, well, this might be it. My arm might actually fall off this time. Like that is a huge psychological effect that anybody, and I just don't think it's fair to judge Baker off of last year. I think that it's a null and void season for him, but when he should be back by week one, this shouldn't necessarily follow him. You can never say never with the shoulder instabilities, but that shouldn't necessarily be an issue for him. Moving on to Jimmy, unless you wanted to talk about Baker.
No, I mean, I just echoing again, I played low level D3 football. I've never once in my life been in a game as competitive as Baker has a million times, but I will say separating my shoulder in high school was the most painful injury I've had, man. I remember waking up the next day, needed to get my mom up to help me put my contacts in because I couldn't raise my arm like above my freaking shoulder. And just like, to your point, like there were a couple times playing through the injury when like it popped out again. And dude, like your entire arm goes numb for like minutes on end, and just
that's
so
called
weak
nerve damage.
Oh man. So yes, I just, you know, the thing with Baker, and I was praising Chase Claypool the other day, and someone's like, man, Ian, you pick some weird ass players to really latch your support or whatever. I hate when players like Baker, like Wentz, like Chase Claypool all of a sudden become everyone's like public enemy number one. When what's really the problem with them? A little bit of immaturity potentially, you know, maybe I understand we have Wentz and maybe some vaccine stuff going on there. And okay, if you have an opinion on that, so be it and everything. But man, I just think there are such bad people out there and some of the hoops we have to jump through to be hating on these guys. Like really, Baker, Wentz, Claypool, these are the guys in the NFL that you want to be pointing your negative energy towards. So miss me with that. But no, it's good to hear that that really was impacting Baker. Also had the knee strain in November. Like it was one of those things I'm pretty sure RotoWorld sent the blurb out several times, NBC Sports Edge Now, where it was like Baker Mayfield, parentheses, everything limited at practice again on Thursday. Yeah, so, rough. You know, NFL's a better product with as many great quarterbacks as possible. Hopefully Baker gets back there. Now on to Jimmy G.
Jimmy G. Sounds like it was the same type of surgery. So I cannot, if I'm anything, Ian, I've tried to be more consistent in my stances. When it comes to play and performance on the field, I've been pulling my hair out about Jimmy Garoppolo. I am close to the Bay. I live close to the Bay. People aren't necessarily a fan of Jimmy either, but it's really justified, I think, just because of his play and how he, you know, just doesn't really show up when you need him to. He does fine. He's the ultimate Shanahan system guy that can pull off some good throws every now and then. And I think that he's just been so overrated. I'm totally going off the rails here. I know we're supposed to be talking about a shoulder. So that is all to preface, though. So here, to be consistent and with what I just said with Baker, this was his throwing shoulder. So he had the same type of procedure to his capsule, whether it was a debridement, like they took bone spurs out, or they actually went up and cinched it up like they did with Baker. I'm not entirely certain, but I know that it was something that was bothering him probably throughout the entire season. So if I'm going to judge, if I say you can't judge Baker, you probably can't judge Jimmy from 2021 either. So this is something that you do want to monitor a little bit more. Once he gets back to throwing, they're going to have to really space it out. This is typically an injury surgery. If it's a cinching down like Baker's, it's between 5, sometimes 6 months, probably closer to 6 for a quarterback. So he's really going to be cutting it close if he's going to sign, you know, either what, I don't know what he's going to do. I don't know if he's going to, you know, San Francisco. I don't know what's going on there. Maybe you have a better feel for that. But I do think this is something that you want to semi keep on your radar, especially if, I think at this point he's like a dart throw anyway, right? Like 2 quarterback league dart throw. So I don't think there's a lot to necessarily discuss there.
We've talked about the 49ers, you know, quote unquote quarterback competition, but just every single thing has continued to lean towards Trey Lance. And honestly, like, I think there's something to be said that Lance didn't get that opportunity last year because of the injuries he happened to be dealing with at that time. So now, just with Jimmy, it was more so when he could potentially be back. It sounds like week one is realistic. We'll see what team is actually going to be that. So moving on to running back, I want to talk first just about some of these running backs in general, man, because nothing pisses me off more than when I, you know, have a quote tweet go out or a ranking or something and the public's just response is, no, he'll get hurt. So you can't draft Christian McCaffrey ever, man. He's on the do not draft list because he'll get hurt. And that's the end of the argument. But I want to see what sort of research, if any, you have on aging running backs or a potential touch cliff. So guys like Eckler, Henry, Zeke, Saquon, Christian McCaffrey, guys that have suffered injuries, but maybe aren't necessarily more injury prone than the average running back who's also going to see, you know, 300 plus touches into the teeth of a defense on any given, you know, during any given season. So overall thoughts on the age cliff, the touch cliff, and some of these running backs.
So this is a really good question. And it's a conversation that requires a lot more nuance than people I think want to have, or maybe don't have the bandwidth to have. Their bottom line tends to be what appears to either be an age cliff or what appears to be an aging process, right? And you can't really, a lot of times, decipher which is which. If you look at some of the research done by another physical therapist in the fantasy space, Adam Hutchison, he's really good. He puts out a lot of good stuff. He basically buckets them into satellite backs, true bell cows, and sort of like hybrid type of backs, right? Somebody like a Dalvin Cook or like a Christian McCaffrey. Okay. Those type of backs don't tend to see the touch cliff because they maintain their efficiency through the air. The older bruising Derrick Henry back types, what appears to be an age cliff, an age cliff for them, or a touch cliff, really is closer to just being an age cliff, right? So the question becomes why? Well, because NFL defenses don't get any older every year, and a starting running back does get older every year. It's insane to say like a 28, 29-year-old, you know, elite athlete is aging, but it happens, man. Like, yeah. when you got, you know, a fresh class of defensive ends that are insane, that are, you know, coming in every year, like I said, you're going to appear to slow down. So if you look at Derrick Henry, I think Dwayne's actually mentioned this. Derrick Henry's, his yards after contact, right? His like elusive runs or whatever, those have slowly started to trickle down. Yeah. And what's kept him up above that elite sort of threshold has been the pure sheer volume. Is his Jones fracture due to all the touches that he's had? That's hard for anybody to really say. Is it due to his frame? I'd be more likely to concede to that. So backs like Henry, it might coincide with a specific amount of touches, but it's usually a lot more nuanced than that. Like, you know, how many touches has Christian McCaffrey had? And do we expect him to fall off if we don't talk about the injuries? Like, not necessarily, right? So that touch rule is very, very nuanced. And I think it can get a little dangerous if you just apply it blanketly. So that's what I have to say first. And then when it comes to like missing games in general for running backs, you have to consider the amount of games missed. So I'm going to try to, this is really hard to follow a podcast, so I'm going to try to explain it as best as I can. From 2016 to 2019, I looked at top, and this is at points per game finishes, the top running backs, top 12 versus the top 12 receivers, and how many games were missed. Came to wide receivers, 50% of top 12 wide receivers in the span missed zero games. The same span for running backs, 33.3% of running backs, top 12 running backs, missed zero games. When it came to missing one game, top running backs and top wide receivers both missed 23%. When it came to missing two games, they both missed 13%. Now, when you get to the missing three or four games, wide receivers accounted for only, the top 12 wide receivers, they were only like 7%. Whereas there were 13% of running backs who missed 3 to 4 games. So okay. Basically what that data is saying or showing us is that when it comes to that 3 to 4 game mark, there are more running backs that miss more, 3 to 4 games than there are wide receivers. And then there are more running backs who don't miss zero games, if that makes sense. So yeah. I don't know if that made any sense. Basically what I'm saying is a lot of times, I think this is overstated, like top running backs versus top wide receivers. Top wide receivers are less likely to get injured, but they also are injured almost as frequently, right? Like the numbers are a lot closer than they appear to be. So that was a long-winded answer. What did you get? Did that make any sense?
No, I think it did, man. So one touch study that we've been hanging our hat on, and we had Tate Seth on the podcast doing great work. He's with a PFF intern, great stuff, University of Michigan. And some of the regression analysis he was able to show was that 1,500 professional carries, usually what we would see is that the performance in terms of rushing yards above expectation starts to fall off, which to your point about Derrick Henry, like we are starting to see that already. And right now it's Henry, Zeke, and Melvin Gordon are the three running backs with that amount. But he wasn't necessarily implying that they're not good fantasy producers. And that's basically my argument with Derrick Henry. Like if Derrick Henry, like, all right, would you consider Derrick Henry just straight up more injury prone than Austin Eckler? Because my analysis, not being a doctor, is that he's not. All these running backs that are getting a little bit older are injury prone. I admit that the best years of Henry's career are behind him. But I also think that if Derrick Henry plays 17 games, he's going to have over 400 touches. And I don't care if he's averaging 4 yards per carry or 6 yards per carry, he's going to be an RB1 with that. So Eckler, Henry, Zeke, Saquon, just straight up, are any of those guys more quote unquote injury prone than each other?
I wouldn't necessarily say that. I think that when it comes to performance versus injury, like you have to really bucket those. And that's what my fantasy points tiers over at fantasypoints.com that I put out every summer. That's what I try to encapsulate is performance and injury. I try to project, is this dude going to fall off versus does this dude have a specific significant injury history that might repeat itself? And the answer when it comes to those guys is, relatively speaking, they all have a very, it's a diverse injury history, but it's an injury history nonetheless, right? So in other words, they've been a starting NFL running back. Like they all get injured. If I had to hang my hat on what might happen again or who might have a specific injury, it unfortunately would be Henry. And again, I don't have a lot of solid proof, simply because of his frame, his size, his aging joints, that he's just a monster, right? Like there's nobody built like him. But the exact argument against him would be your exact argument, I think, is that he's a monster. Nobody's ever been built like him. So if he could take another year of a beating, of a pounding, and get 300 carries, then I think that he could put up some numbers. Here's another study too. And I really am bad about this. I need to start citing them more often. There's a study done on college running backs in their last year. And essentially, if they saw 250 or more carries in their last college year, then they actually averaged, they went on and they became the group who averaged 300 carries per year in the NFL. And so what you see is, if you see a lot of volume in college, that is probably implying that you are already durable. So you're going to see a lot of touches when it comes to the NFL. And maybe I really butchered like that explanation that I gave about like the running backs and wide receivers. Basically, what you need to know is I have a little bit more digestible data here, right? Same time span, same little study that I did. Wide receivers miss an average of 1.4 games. They miss a median of 0 games and they miss a mode of 0 games. So that's key, right?
Yeah.
Now their average is 1.4 and their standard deviation is 2.6. Let's go to running backs. The average amount of time missed for running back is 2. The median is 1. The mode is actually also 0. So the most frequently amount of time missed for running backs, wide receivers is 0 for both of them. And running backs have a mean of 2 missed games with a standard deviation of 2.6. So even though the average is lower for wide receivers, they have almost a mirror image standard deviation. Yeah. All of that, I think, encapsulates what I was trying to say, is that the edge you think you're getting by trying to decide which running back might be injured versus which one might fall off the cliff is marginal, and good luck trying to guess. Like that's just really difficult to do.
So if we use our, you know, was it 67, 95, 99 rule, the standard deviations off the median, it sounds like it's only about a difference of like maybe 1 game on average between the wide receivers and running backs. Like that's surprising to me, because I thought it would have been a lot more.
Exactly. And you have to remember too, this is the top 12 running backs, right? But that's sort of what we want, right? The end result. We want that. Exactly. Like these people who ended, you know, their end result was a top 12 player. Like what
you said, it was per game, right?
Yes, points per game.
Yeah, so points. Yeah, so I mean, at that point, we're not rewarding the players that did make it through and then trying to look back on it, because I think that's the problem we have with fantasy finishes sometimes, or God forbid, you know, like spare me the Brandon Ayuk week 8 and on. It's like, yeah, when he plays three more games
from that. Was it not consensus that we don't do cumulative totals anymore? How's that not the case?
It's like, okay, for a full season, I'm fine putting in, you know, a 5 or 6 games played threshold, but come on, people, be better. Okay, Edwin, one guy that I see you tweet about almost every single day, none other than Saquon Barkley.
Every day, man, it might be every day at this point.
He is rising up the ranks, whether the public wants to or not. I'm old enough to remember about 3 or 4 months ago when this dude was a freak outside the top 15, seemingly. Now he's knocking on the door of the top 12, could be back in the first round before we know it. Is there any reason, Edwin, coming off one of the flukiest freaking injuries I've ever seen, which still pains me, when he just stepped on, I believe, his teammates, the Cowboys' freaking ankle sprain. Is there any reason to believe what has happened to Saquon Barkley over the past few years that he is any more injury prone than the other running backs that we've been talking about?
Listen, that was a fluke injury. And you'll see other injury analysts who, a couple in particular who weren't on board with me the year after the ACL, who agree with me like he was probably going to smash. I was probably wrong. And I try not to like pump that stuff up because I'm wrong plenty. But there have been, you know, other injury analysts specifically who conceded like, yeah, he was probably going to smash. And he was. He was on his way to smash. He's playing 84% of snaps. And then after the ankle injury, he played like 60%.
Yep. Back-to-back top 10 finishes. It was all coming together.
Back-to-back, like Drake. Here's the thing. Had the ankle injury. It was a lateral ankle sprain. When it happened, I was like, well, you know, average time for lateral ankle sprains, you know, it's like 1 or 2 games. Dude ended up missing like another, 4 games or something like that. So it was a lot more severe than we anticipated. He might have even had a small fracture of the distal fibular head, but I'm not the fibular head, the lateral malleolus is what it's called. Just a little bone on the outside of your foot. It's not uncommon. So comes back. Graham Barfield pointed this out. After he came back, he only played like 60% of the snaps. Man, and there's nothing, and Graham also pointed this out, there's nothing more sad than when it was him and
you couldn't tell the difference between them.
Tell the difference. You'd wait for them to get up off the pile and you'd go, no, that was 26. Oh yeah, no, that was 28. Wait, no, which one was it? Oh man, dude, terrible. Nothing hurt my that was like a pit in my stomach moment every time it happened. So no, there's no reason to believe he's any more injury prone than any other running back in the NFL. He's 2 years removed from this ACL that he was going to smash from anyway. He's had an entire offseason to rehab the lateral ankle sprain. He is a literal elite athlete from that perspective. Like, if I was wrong and I felt the process from last year was wrong, then I would say that. I don't think the process was wrong on him. I think the process is exactly what we went through. An elite athlete, high draft capital, and the ability to smash after coming off a relatively isolated ACL. So if we were on board last year, again, going back to what I said about being consistent, I would feel hypocritical if I was all of a sudden out this year. Like, I'm back in now. It's sad to see that he's back in the top 12. I was hoping for like a Justin Jefferson, Tyreek Hill, Saquon start, man. I saw somebody screenshot that the other day and it was incredible.
All right, Evan. So I'm not coming here to go over everything we said in the past, but at the, you know, like you're saying, being consistent, being willing with the process, how do you feel about James Conner? Because he is someone that you talked about over the years, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I believe going to last year, like you have your tiers of injury proneness, and Conner, I believe, was in the highest because of all these freaking significant injuries he kept having again and again and again. Now, he made it through a season, most of the season, until the end, where he did not get injured. Have you changed your tune on James Conner, or do you think last year was probably an exception?
That's hard for me to know, man. And I think this is like one specific situation where I don't know. Like, it comes down to the fact, like, I just don't know, right? I tweeted this the other day. So James Conner, yeah, you're right. He had a major connective tissue injury. Last year it was it was 5 out of the last 6. Now it's 5 out of the last 7, right? So a major connective tissue injury. In 2018, averaged 20 touches, 78% of snaps, played 12 games. 2019, averaged 15 touches, 52% of snaps, played 10 games. 2020, he had 16 touches, 63% of snaps, 11 games. Then finally last year, averaged 16 touches, 58% of snaps, and 15 games. I mean, he proved me wrong, really. I mean, he hadn't played more than 12 games in, you know, since college.
Yeah.
And last year he bucked that trend. I can go one of two ways. I can either say that was a fluke, or I can say I think that he's finally overcome, you know, this injury issue. And if I want to stay consistent, I can really say that I will tentatively trust him since he's done it before. Usually, you know, if you're going to be off on a guy, like this would have been the year to be off of him, you know, if he would have had a down 2021, but he played 15 games. So I will say tentatively, I trust him to maybe stay and play, you know, 12 to 16 games, but I'm still like, I don't feel great about it. If that makes sense. Like if you go hero RB with James Conner, then like, I will give you my man card, like whatever that is. Like I my wife would tell you that she has it. So I'll have to ask her for permission to get it out of her wallet, but I will literally give you my man card. If you take, and it, whether you're a woman or a man, I will give you my man card. If you draft James Conner as your hero or anchor RB.
It's just one of these things, man, where if we look at every running back and we just say, hey, they're playing 17 games this year, no injuries are going to happen, it's really tough to keep Connor out of the top 10 based on the Kingsbury usage that we've seen over these years, where he runs these guys into the ground more than just about anyone. They just gave him $20 million. They added Daryl freaking Williams in May on a veteran minimum contract. Okay, I understand a lot of you watched Keontae Ingram film in February. They took him in the sixth round, so I don't think he's necessarily the biggest threat to this job as well. So it's good to hear that. I think where he's going in drafts really outside the top 12, top 13 backs is okay. If Connor was to get into that Fournette Saquon range, that would be the problem. But for now, I do think it's a decent discount off those guys.
Can I say it, Ian? Yeah. Can I say it?
Yeah.
Clearing throat. I like him better in best ball.
Oh, the running back. The running back better in best ball. Wow.
That's like the only category I can honestly place him in. That's just like that's me saying, I get it. He played almost a full season last year. I just don't love it. I just don't feel good about it.
Rashad Penny, someone that's coming to the league. I maintain he's been good the whole time. Unfortunately, has had one knee, calf, hamstring injury after another really throughout his entire career. Based on what has kind of happened to Rashad Penny in his short career, again, where would you give him just a moderate, as injury prone as any other running back in the NFL, or is he someone that, yeah, probably would make sense to maybe knock down a few ranks because of all these injuries that he's had?
You know, I think that you have to look at Rashad Penny in this window of time where he really honestly dealt with the ACL plus and the ramifications of the ACL plus for a period of like 2 years, right? Then he comes back, has the calf, has the hamstring. He played I'm relatively certain he played more than 90% of games in college. And I cite that often because college availability predicts or precludes NFL availability. So that was important for him. And he did come back. And I think some of the hamstring soft tissue stuff is workload related. Less worried than with Connor, but I understand a little bit of hesitance with him. If he can get through the first 4 weeks of the season, for example, and manage that, the uptick in load and manage the uptick in work that he's going to get and show that he can stay on the field and prevent these soft tissue injuries. And Seattle's pretty cutting edge with a lot of their rehab performance stuff. So hopefully they, you know, have addressed that or as best as they can. I'm sure they have. So I'm in on Rashad Penny. I think, I don't even know what's his ADP.
Bro, he's going like RB 37, RB 40 ish.
Easy. Yeah. Here's the thing too. And I want to get your take on this. Rumor has it that Kenneth Walker doesn't even know that footballs can fly in the air because he's never caught one. I don't know if he's gonna all of a sudden like watch film and learn, if they're gonna like teach him how to catch. I don't know if he's played catch yet. Maybe he's played catch with who's even, oh my god, who's in Seattle? Drew Locke. Oh, your boy Drew Locke. Like,
yeah,
but I don't know, but like rumor has it that he doesn't actually know that it's possible to throw the ball in an NFL game. Can you confirm or deny, and like how will that impact his receiving game?
I tend to think, while we do get the occasional Ronald Jones exception to the rule, like I think professional NFL running backs are capable of catching checkdowns and swings. Now, when we start to look at the McCaffreys, the Ecklers of the world, yes, there is a big, you know, discernible difference between the guys. But with Walker, it's just one of those things. And we see it like Jonathan Taylor, some of these Wisconsin running backs too. The Big Ten teams, they're in I formation to have you run downhill, not to, you know, move you out into the slot and pepper you with targets. But the problem is that, you know, whether it's Walker, whether it's Penny, Seattle just as a general rule hasn't been throwing to their running backs. Now, maybe that was more of a Russ thing, but the problem was, like, we just didn't even find out if Penny could do it a bunch, because of course we gotta get Travis Homer and DJ Dallas some touches out there. So I think Walker is capable enough, but the problem with him and Penny, like, it's good to hear that we don't have to worry about the injury stuff with Penny. Doesn't really change the fact that it's looking like Walker's going to take some of that early down role. And sorry, people, I think Dallas or Homer are probably going to cut away 20-25% snaps per game. It's going to be a pain in the ass. And it's an offense where, look, we're not expecting them to be good at all. I would love if they were, and if Drew Lock was a part of that, but we're not expecting that, obviously. And we can look at the win totals and all that, that back it up. Like, there are going to be games, I think, man, where we could look up at the end and be like, how the hell did DJ Dallas outsnap Kenneth Walker and Rashad Penny? But they might be stubborn enough to have that pass down running back. But at least our guy Rashad should be healthy enough to keep averaging 5+ yards per carry. I know there's other running back stats that we can talk about. He's good in those too. Let's see a full healthy season from Penny for once. One time, everyone. Edwin, we could call this the main event. Let's talk some Achilles injuries. Cam Akers, James Robinson. Akers has been at the facility 8 a.m. every day the whole offseason. He says he's 100%. Talk about, I guess, how his recovery could be different than someone like a James Robinson, and what to kind of expect from players in general coming off this Achilles injury.
Yeah, I kind of view Cam Akers and Jameson as unfortunately going in opposite trajectories. I can see James Robinson tailing off. I know that he's relatively, he's actually got really good athletic numbers. I mean, he's not the fastest dude in the world, but when it comes to somebody like Cam Akers, we know that he, you know, also was an okay athlete, right? He's pretty good, I'd say. And when you look at return to sport, you look at return to performance, you really have to factor in what was the injury, what was their draft capital, and what was their athleticism prior to the injury. Those things more or less predict, per the research, that a player can get back to the level that they were at before. That's at least in ACLs, and it's probably a general rule across the board. Now, the question is, well, maybe not the question, but the point I need to make is an ACL injury is not an Achilles injury. An Achilles tendon injury is disruption of the fibers that connect your big giant calf muscles to your ankle and allow you to push off, to like come up onto your tiptoes, to jump cut, to do all of the things that you need to do as an NFL running back quickly. When you disrupt those fibers, when you disrupt that tendon, even if you repair it, it's never the same. There are some changes that go on in that muscle. It is a part of the soft tissue and an extension of the soft tissue that creates power and force and agility. That is totally different than a ligament. And I promise I'm getting to the point. A ligament connects a bone to a bone. So once you make up for the muscular imbalances in rehab, hamstring and quad, that ligament becomes a native part of the knee. And for the most part, dudes can perform after that. It's a static tissue in an ACL versus like a live tissue in an Achilles.
Basically ligaments connect bones and the Achilles is connecting like active muscles and shit.
So that is, you got it, man. Jeez, you're smart cookie. So moral of the story, could he come back after, you know, another 3-4 months and just train his ass off and maybe get back to where he was before? Yeah, he could. He's young. He's going to get a leash from the front office. So he could definitely make that switch. What I said initially when this happened, and I kind of like, I really haven't changed my stance, is Cam Akers could probably get back to like 85-90% of what we thought his ceiling should be. I think that's if whatever you think Cam Akers was going to be, chop off 10-15% of that. That, in my opinion, is a realistic expectation based on the data, based on the pathophysiology, based on what we know about him. And he's going to get the best opportunity of probably any running back after an Achilles that we've ever seen. So he could prove me wrong. But the bottom line is there's no data to show that he's going to do it. Like, there's nothing that we could say confidently and like, oh, he's going to come back and be a top 12 running back. But I think I heard you and Dwayne talk about this too, is he's going in like the fourth round. Like he's priced at basically his floor. So, I mean, if you can get him in the fourth round, I understand. And to wrap it up, Cam Akers is like, and I know this is going to sound like maybe harsh, but like, I don't want to shrug off the fact that the dude came back like 6 months after an Achilles tear. Like that's insane. That's nuts.
Yeah.
That's quite literally pretty unprecedented to start in an NFL game. So that's huge. Like as a PT, I'm like, that's incredible. Now, it's okay for two things to be true at once, for me to feel that way and for me in fantasy to just be like, Cam Akers, he's fine. Like, he's fine. You get what I'm saying? So, like, I think that people really want to, like, I think people need to cool the Jets a little bit. Like, yeah. He is fine. I don't think he's going to come back and smash necessarily.
No, that's fair. And we are a lot of excuses being made for the schedule. It's like, all right, you know, I understand he had to deal with, you know, the Buccaneers run D. We also have seen other running backs, you know, notably Khalil Herbert earlier in that year be just fine against that Bucs run D. So he wasn't good. He was terrible coming back. Like we can just call a spade there, and it's a good story. We have this tendency, man, with these good stories, Teddy Bridgewater, Cam Akers, Alex Smith, these guys come back and we just like refuse to say that they're shitty on the football field, probably because it's not like nice. It's not cool to do or anything like that. So I'm not saying to all of a sudden, you know, go out there and just start hating on NFL players coming back from major injuries or anything like that. But we can, when we're talking about, you know, predicting their future performance, be honest with ourselves about it. But I do think that final point remains about where he's going. Like him and James Conner are being priced with their injury risk. And if they were going as top 10 running backs, I would probably be out on both them as well, because we'd be talking about a lot of other running backs that we don't need to have these conversations about. But for the time being, they have superior workloads to guys that are, we're less worried about, you know, just their body falling apart. And that becomes a bigger question. What about James Robinson? The latest report I think we got was that he's expected to be ready midway through training camp. To me, I'm just continuing. And with James Robinson, talk about when you expect him to be ready and if ETN is fully good to go recovering from the list, Frank.
I think ETN is going to be ready to go. He's had plenty of time to recover. He's had plenty of time to sort of recoup. And the receiving game is really, hopefully, if he gets it, is going to be what keeps him afloat and makes him fantasy relevant. I think any of the risk baked in with Etienne could be any risk with Etienne, I think, is erased by the passing game. That's the point I'm trying to make.
Okay.
Been up since 6 a.m., Ian. Jeez, I'm trying to put words together. Words are hard. So, James Robinson, just to summarize my little blurb on him over the injury insights, reports from multiple sources placed Robinson in training camp. They said at like some point, literally like at some point, that puts him about seven months post-op. The average time for an NFL athlete to come back is 8.9 months. So I'm kind of curious what they'll do with him. It's not unreasonable for him to be eased back in, but I wouldn't be surprised if he actually starts on the PUP list. Initially, I thought like he'd be back based on that 9 month timeline. I thought he'd be back like October. Yeah. So I don't know if this is like one of those Michael Gallup optimistic reports, or if it's like a legitimate report that he's going to be. I don't think he'll be ready and unrestricted by then. So if he can come back during camp, I anticipate that it's still going to be at least until October, until he's like full go, like an effective NFL running back. And I'll be really interested to see if that's the case. I don't know if that's going to happen for him necessarily.
Is the tough part with this. Like, it's a beat writer telling us like that the team's optimistic about it. Of course they want to be optimistic about it, but man, it just gets them into such trouble sometimes. Like when Pete Carroll said that, like they were fully they put Chris Carson on IR and the next day Pete's like, yeah, he's gonna be back for training camp though. It's like, shut up, man. Just take a page out of the Buccaneers playbook and say, we're not putting a timeline on it. We'll see when he can get back. Couple other running back things. Baltimore Ravens, J.K. Dobbins, Gus Edwards, both coming back from ACLs. Sounds like Dobbins, though, potentially a little bit more significant. With that said, the things you mentioned before, you know, age, draft capital, athleticism, obviously Dobbins passes all those, checks all those boxes with flying colors.
Yeah. The problem with Dobbins is there are reports that he's not, I mean, we're like 9-10 months out for him, and he's just like catching balls off the jugs machine. So you'd really want him doing a lot more by now. And what that indicates to me is that he might have had other ligaments involved. When there are other ligaments involved, things just get a little more complicated, a little more sticky, even more so if there's meniscus involved. I remember his was really violent, so I would not be shocked if there was a lot of other stuff going on there. That tends to slow your rehab timeline down. So it doesn't necessarily mean that he's behind for his specific injury, just means he's behind based on averages. So, you know, they've even talked about him coming off of the PUP. So all of that is really not great. I think that really drops his stock. In addition to, and I'll let you talk about this a little bit more, like, I don't really know how much passing game work that he's going to get, right? We love my darling poster boy is Saquon, right? Because we know he's going to get at least some passing work. Like, we know he's the dude there. Like, I don't know how much passing work Dobbins is going to get, which would help to close that gap. So the severe injury, the fact that he's still not working out, the fact that he might start on the PUP list, and the fact that we don't know how many targets he's going to get to help close that gap that might be low, you know, reduced because of the lack of rushing, like, which even talk about his rushing volume, right? Like, I just don't know if I love any of the situation.
No, that's very fair. I have not been drafting much Dobbins at all because he's one of those guys too, where like once we continue to get, and I think we are starting to get the negative news, and I think he's just going to fall further and further down draft boards. You know, they love talking up his pass game ability seemingly every offseason, but at the end of the day, they're a run first offense. And what's Lamar do when his reads aren't there? He scrambles, which makes sense. You're Lamar freaking Jackson. Go be the best athlete on the field. Like, who cares about throwing the ball to J.K. Dobbins? But it's not just a Lamar thing. We see this with all dual threat quarterbacks, and it's a reason why the running backs usually have a hard time getting the same sort of production. They aren't getting the checkdowns, and then when they're around the goal line, just in general, like, they now have another party taken away, eating into that rushing pie. So I have done studies to show, like, when Mike Vick and Tyrod Taylor, like, you looked at some of like the LeSean McCoy type running backs who had an actual extensive history with like pocket passers and with the dual threats, and they average more yards per carry with the dual threats, which makes sense. You can run the read option game, you force defensive ends to stay home more so, you know, being more wary of the quarterback's mobility. But man, improving your yards per carry by 0.2, that's not making up for, you know, two fewer targets per game or three fewer rush attempts and all that. So it really does come down to volume. And it sounds like Dobbins might not exactly be healthy enough to have a lot of it. What about Gus Edwards though? So if Dobbins is looking like a potential PUP candidate, Gus Edwards is screaming value right now if he's going to be good to go.
Yeah, honestly, not even knowing the specifics of Edwards is return date, which I think is only, you know, I think it's only like not even a month separated from Dobbins. As long as he's ready to go by week one, then yeah, I definitely think that he's a guy to take. Like, I wouldn't expect, you know, this star season from him or like this, you know, breakout type year from him or anything like that. But I think he could be decent with some volume, right? He's definitely the guy to monitor, especially if Dobbins starts on the PUP. Then I think that, you know, get lock in those first 6 weeks. Like, this thing about fantasy is, people, I think, or maybe it's just me projecting, they view the start of the season as like, oh, I can just get my feet underneath me. It's like, no, you should probably get as many wins as you possibly can starting week one, like, because you don't know what's going to happen. And I think that Gus Edwards is one of those guys that, like, if you have to burn some capital on him, but it'll get you, you know, help you get 2-3 wins, then I think it's worth it.
The problem with Gus is like he gains like the ugliest 5 yards per carry ever, and people just like want to hold that against him. He doesn't have, you know, your Javonte Williams missed tackle force rates or all these, you know, gaudy highlights. And he's also not going to be catching passes. But guess what? The Ravens like him, and they're going to keep giving him the ball potentially 15 times a game if Dobbins is going to be out of the picture. So Gus bust, baby. All he does is average 5 yards per carry. Like, there are,
it's like worse, the anti-Javonte Williams.
Exactly. Really is. You know, there is something to be said about Javonte. Look, I think Javonte is a great running back. I think Tony Pollard is a great running back. But I think there is something to be said for the guy. Like, all right, when an offensive coach calls into play and they say, I want this ball to go through B-gap, you know Gus Edwards is taking it through the B-gap. Tony Pollard and Javonte, yeah, they bounce outside. They break three tackles and they still get their yards. But I, like, NFL coaches aren't as dumb, I think, as we make them out to be sometimes. Like, there's a we have exceptions, but like, man, just Melvin Gordon, Ezekiel Elliott, these guys don't get enough respect. That's
what you're saying is establish a run. It really sounds like you're saying you'd like to establish a run as hard
as
possible.
That's all I'm trying to say here. Hey, we're seeing right now, man, the New Jersey Generals, the USFL, they've been establishing a run with all sorts of success. So if you want to get more into that, let me know.
Next.
That's what I thought. James White with the hip injury. Everyone's trying to go down this. Ramondre Stevenson's going to get fed role. It's acting like Damon Harris isn't going to exist. Personally, I think Ty Montgomery, maybe even Pierre Strong, one of these other guys could take that James White role. But just focusing on White, coming off this hip injury, being over 30 years, you know, I see you shaking your head. Sounds like the pup list is a very real possibility here.
Yeah, I mean, he had the same injury that Ryan Fitzpatrick had, and Ryan Fitzpatrick retired. I'm not saying that's the reason, right? But there's no way on God's green earth that the hip injury that Fitzpatrick had didn't play into his retirement. That is a significant injury. That is not quite to a level, but it is a significant injury. Like, dislocating your hip is a big deal. Like, that does not happen. You have to be non-weight bearing for a long time after surgery. I hope that he can sort of come back and be ready by week one and put up some numbers. But like, man, I just don't see it happening. I don't know how. I mean, he's going to have to get some legitimate receiving volume to probably make up for some burst that he's going to be lacking at 30 years old after this hip injury. Like, I hope nothing but the best for James White, but he's just not a guy I'm interested in. He's not a guy that I think is going to have a ton of upside, and he might start on the pup.
We always get these, you know, great best shape of their lives reports, and, you know, beat writers are just, they have so many things to do that they can't tell us that. Oh, hey, Elijah Mitchell is actually ahead of Trey Sermon on the depth chart. No, hey, Brandon Ayuk isn't even going to play ahead of Trent freaking Sherfield in week one. But thank God we get those, you know, best shape of their lives reports in the media time.
That's right.
We got the one Chiefs report about Clyde Edwards-Helaire allegedly dropping down to 160 pounds post gallbladder surgery. Is that bullshit, Edwin? Or is, like, is that a serious enough injury where, like, because look, we talked about Baker and Jimmy and writing off last year. If Clyde's serious, which, I mean, I'm not calling Clyde a liar, but, like, clearly he had the surgery. Like, from what you know, like, how serious is that gallbladder surgery? And is it enough for us to be able to look at what Clyde did in 2021 and be like, yeah, not surprising didn't do that much?
So, disclaimer, this is out of my wheelhouse. But based on my limited knowledge about what happened to him, I think that it's possible that this actually did play a role in the shape that he was in. Did he drop down from whatever he is, like 210 to like 160? I don't know. I think that there's probably some reality to what he's saying. I don't want to discredit him per se. So I do think that that played a role. If he got behind the eight ball, then it's going to be really hard for him to catch up, right? So I do think there's some merit to thinking to yourself, like, oh man, like, if he was in, you know, bad shape and lost weight and then had to get back in the weight room, et cetera, like, I think there's some merit to that. What I would say is you'd hope to see an improvement throughout the season. And by the end of the season, you'd hope to see a change. Did we see that? And I'm asking legitimately.
Not really, because he got hurt again with like a different injury. That was the problem.
Kind of, so that also could be like, I was going to say that might be like also something that, like, maybe that was also that played into, yeah, like, if he had to get back in the weight room and was injured. So, like, the bottom line, I know it's a really vague answer. It's like, I don't know. I think it does give you a little bit of hope. If you're willing to bet on, you know, CEH and somebody else around that range, then he's young enough and he's talented enough to be like, okay, like, fine. I just think that the CEH train, like, CEH hype train got so out of control that we're trying to, like, we're 2 years later, we're still trying to reel in our expectations. I don't know what to expect from him. Like, that's the bottom line. I think he could be really good. But in a very similar way that this might just be Cam Akers, like, this might just be CEH. Like, this might just be him.
Yeah, it's never good too when you have guys like Jerick McKinnon coming in. You like have to ask yourself serious questions about like the impact on this. Like, you know, how high are we really on CEH if guys like Jerick McKinnon are making that big of a difference in the outlook? All right, man, I don't want to keep you here for 2 hours. So on the wide receivers, feel free, particularly once you get the ACL section, just fire off, you know, some potential timelines with it. Before we get to those guys though, what's going on with Michael Thomas? This is a situation where we keep hoping he's just going to get out there and be healthy. There seemed to be some encouraging stuff earlier in the offseason, but all of a sudden it's June, still doesn't seem to be out there. And Nick Underhill, for my money's worth, best Saints beat reporter out there, one thing he said was like, if Michael Thomas isn't out there by July, then he will definitely be concerned. It's almost July, Edwin. What are your thoughts on Michael Thomas?
I have no idea. 100%. I have no idea. Don't know what happened. Don't know why he's still in rehab. Don't know why this is taking 2 years to rehab. My on the worst case scenario end of the spectrum, he's got legitimate arthritis in his ankle the way that Todd Gurley had it in his knee. That's absolute worst case. I'm not saying that's going on, but that's the worst case scenario. That's plausible. That's in the cards. Best case scenario, he waited way too long for the surgery, which we already know to be true anyway, and then needed a second surgery to clean up or a second surgery to correct the first one. Like, complications do happen, right? We usually hear about like, oh yeah, he went in for surgery and everything went great. And that is usually
went great
the case.
Every time.
Every time. And that's honestly like that's statistically true. Usually nothing goes wrong with an orthopedic surgery. Sometimes things go wrong. Sometimes it's not the surgeon's fault. It's not the PT's fault. Sometimes shit just happens. So that could be something that happened with him, right? And he was already behind the eight ball to begin with. So like, honestly, I have no idea what's going on with him. He's the biggest risk for that reason. And I don't, unless he's falling to me in like the eighth, ninth, 10th round at this point, like I would, even with the upside like that, I'd be hard pressed to take him over maybe a handful of guys with like at least legitimate concrete upside. Like, granted, they can all get injured at any point, but like at least I know that they're going to be on the field to start the season.
Trying to pull up my underdog exposure right this second, just making for some fantastic podcast listening right now. Okay, Chris Olave, I can't get it up right now. Chris Olave is either my highest owned wide receiver right
now
or
say?
Number two. Chris Olave, man, we should be drafting. I was trying, oh my gosh. Evan, Michael Thomas, I saw the video that you quote tweeted, man. Like, this is terrible. He's jumping.
Great.
Like, he's doing one leg jumps. And your point is like, if this is rehab, this is what your tweet was. If this is rehab 2 years later, I just don't know what to think. And like, that's not good, man. To your point, like this should be probably someone that we are really falling down draft boards at this point, because as much as it sounded like things were okay in March, like here we are and there's still nothing good.
No, it's not. And the point that I was trying to make with that tweet was like, yeah, that, and we don't know what else he was doing. We don't know for a fact that, you know, he's not doing more. We don't know that this was in, maybe this was in January. Like, we don't know. There are a lot of things we don't know, right? So like, I don't want to jump to conclusions, but if that video was taken in June, you know, a year later, a year removed from when the surgery was last year, he's just now doing single leg box jumps. What is going on? Like, he should be doing much more than that. So that's sort of what I was trying to get at there. And it goes back to what I led the conversation with. It's like, I don't know. Like, I don't know what's going on there. Anybody who wants to take a shot on him, same person that took the shot on James Conner, like maybe you hit on one or two of those and you win a league, but like, it's not going to be me.
Once we're done here, I'll be moving Michael Thomas down the ranks and continuing to move Chris Olave right up. Number one, highest exposed wide receiver, Terry McLaurin. Number two, Chris Olave.
Terry McLaurin.
I try to tell myself I'm not a Buckeye homer, but then sometimes I look at my ranks and I'm like, I don't know here. What's going on with Will Fuller, man? I think I heard someone saying it's like really, really messed up his hand. It seemed like there were some hints last year too that it could be a little bit personal stuff going on as well. Do you have any thoughts on the Will Fuller situation?
Dude, I don't even know how he hurt his hand. It's a broken finger. It was a finger injury. And to be 100% honest, my perspective right now is that it doesn't seem that it was a football injury. Like, did we ever get a report that it was a football injury?
Okay.
Per
DraftSharks.com, their injury history tool, they're saying hand finger fracture, suffered a broken finger in week 4's loss to the Colts.
Okay. I'd have to go back and watch that. But moral story, it was a very bizarre situation that it took that long. Like, his finger must have like exploded. And they had to put a piece of back together.
And that's what I think I heard someone say that basically was what happened. And sorry, I don't have the source for who said
no,
that.
No, so you're good. You're good.
Could be wrong, yeah. But would that make sense then why it's taken so long if it was like that severe of a break? Okay.
It would be like they considered amputation. Like they could, that's like, it would be that bad that they might've considered amputation. And honestly, that would just fall back under the bad luck category. As soon as Will Fuller, I mean, I'm probably going to load up on Will Fuller. He's the classic dude that like at this point, no risk, like no risk and no biscuit, right? Like just throw him on the end of your bench. See what happens. Maybe he signs with the Chiefs, right? Like that's a best case scenario. Like imagine if that were to happen. Like I would love that. So he's literally just put them on at the end of your benches. Like if I could give any advice that's like safe, and I think that could benefit a lot of people, just go get Will Fuller, put him on the end of your bench, see what happens.
That is good to hear. Always been standing, my guy, Will Fuller. Chiefs or Packers, man. I know we say this like every offseason, but you could imagine. T. Higgins with the labrum. You mentioned Baker before and how, other than bad luck, it's not necessarily an injury that we should expect to be bothering for the rest of career. But is it different because T's playing wide receiver and Baker's playing quarterback?
It's a little different. You do expect a lot more contact for a wide receiver than a quarterback, generally speaking. But it should be something that doesn't necessarily follow him. Again, you can never be too sure with these shoulder sort of instabilities, if you call it an instability. We know that Dalvin Cook has dealt with his. I would say that it's unlikely that this is going to follow him. I don't want to say that it's not possible or plausible. So I think anybody around, anybody in your ranks, like around T. Higgins, if you're splitting hairs from a dynasty perspective, then maybe that's something that you knock T. Higgins for.
Sterling Shepard. Coming off an Achilles, I've seen some people just kind of forget this or almost like dismiss it, but wide receiver off an Achilles. I feel like this is actually pretty new. Obviously, we saw Uzoma and OJ Howard at tight end have the issue and a couple running backs over the years. But seemingly, man, everything we just talked about with the Achilles being that much more severe than the ACL, like it seems like the Achilles would be an even a bigger issue for a wide receiver versus a running back, or am I overthinking it?
No, I mean, it's not overthinking it, right? It's just things that seem intuitive that aren't necessarily intuitive. So an Achilles, right? So we're talking about earlier power, strength, being able to push, plant, cut, do it quickly, powerfully. Mm-hmm. You don't necessarily need that as a wide receiver, right? So we saw Emmanuel Sanders come back at like 65 years old and was able after like an Achilles tear, right? And like he did well. So it's not to say again that he's going to come back and be a world beater and be Emmanuel Sanders the way he was, but I think this is something wide receivers can manage because it is a much more of a cerebral position. Like it's a lot more of body control. It's a lot of establishing, your route tree. You don't have to be necessarily powerful. You just have to be quick in small windows, which I think is possible. After this Achilles tear, you can maneuver and look at Keenan Allen, right? Like everybody talks about Keenan Allen all the time. Like, I don't think he's like the fastest receiver in the league by any means, right? I mean, he's athletic, obviously, but right. Like he doesn't necessarily operate because of his athleticism. If this was somebody like Tyreek Hill, I'd say something, probably have a different opinion, but we know Sterling Shepard's like the classic slot guy, right? Like he's going to catch, he can catch like 50 balls for, 51 yards and get you, 101 fantasy points in one game. So like, I think that this is fine and he's probably not even going drafted, is he?
Very, very end of things. It's again, with a lot of these guys, it's not so much for them. It's like if Shepard is out of the picture, then we can feel better about Tony and Wandale and stuff. But it sounds like Shepard, reasonable shot to just be ready to go this year. And I did blank on Manny Sanders. And the fact that Sanders did that at 33 or whatever. I mean, yeah, shout out. I loved Manny Sanders had this quote a couple years ago talking about he's like, I am a diva. He's like, I want the ball every play, but it's like, he's like, I'm going to go out there, and work my ass off too with that. And he came back. He played 17 games that year. He came back from the Achilles because he got traded halfway through the year to San Francisco, and he didn't even get a bye week. So for him to still go through that, just a true OG of
Manny Sanders got? You know what Manny Sanders got?
What?
He got that dog in him.
Got that dog. I've been waiting for the first time to tweet out the x-ray with the dog in there.
Right time.
I know it's gold.
It's one of my favorite, honestly. One of my favorite ones so far. So I think it's top. It's probably top five over the last several years.
It's incredible. All right. I have 7 wide receivers with ACL injuries. I think we've kind of discussed the issues coming back from already. In terms of timeline for these guys, feel free to rip them off. Chris Godwin, when are you expecting him to be back?
Chris Godwin, man, absolute bare minimum timeline for Chris Godwin. 9 months, October 3rd. I don't know where that falls in the NFL calendar. It sounds like it's week 4 or 5. All of these guys coming off of an ACL. Doesn't matter where. But when you look at their surgery date, their surgical date, not their date of injury, their surgical date, calculate 9 months from that date. That is the soonest, most plausible date you will see them come back. And they probably won't be 100% at that time. OBJ, he came back in 10 months and I think 2 weeks, right? His first one. You saw Cooper Kupp. Cooper Kupp had 10 months to come back from his. Saquon Barkley had 10 and a half months to come back from his. you're seeing that, you know, these dudes need the time to get back. And the 9 months does a couple of things. And one, it allows them to get their feet back under them from an athletic perspective. The first 6 months of an ACL, I talked to actually one of my Twitter buddies, who's also an orthopedic surgeon, Dr. Deepak Chona, smart dude. He basically said that there, as an orthopedic surgeon, asking an athlete to come back before the 9 month mark is probably not responsible. And he specifically said, asking them to come back at 6 to 9 months is probably reckless. And so it's just not something that you're ever going to see. So ahead of schedule reports are complete bullshit. You're ever going to see ahead of schedule with an ACL when they're 4 months out, like with the Michael Gallup report, right? Like he's 4 months post-op and saying, oh yeah, he should be ready, you know, by 7 months. It's like 4 months post-op, he just started doing higher level stuff. You don't even know where he's going to be in a month. So that's what I have to do with like all these ACL guys. Chris Godwin, October 3rd. I have all these timelines. If you go to the injury insights tab at fantasypoints.com, who else do we have? Because I can give you all the, do you want me to just shout these out, Ian?
Yeah, let's do it. Michael Gallup,
great guy that we just talked about. And now I lost him. It was just now. Over. Michael Gallup, we're probably two of the best guys planet. Michael Gallup, based information alone, we could realistically see Gallup mid-November.
Jameson Williams. Mm-hmm.
Jameson Williams. Oh, Jameson Williams was another one. He was ahead of schedule for a long time until he wasn't. 9 months from his surgery date is October 13th. And again, with all these dates, I'm giving you the fastest possible time they could get back. October 13th.
John Mechie.
Ooh, yes, the Alabama teammate. What a wild ride that Alabama receiver room has been over the last like 5 years. December 10th was the surgery date. September 10th is the soonest that you could see John Mechie.
Okay, that's a little better than we thought. Odell Beckham.
Oh, that's a tough one. I don't know what they're going to do with OBJ. On one hand, you know, previously elite wide receiver in the NFL, now Super Bowl winning, you know, championship wide receiver, honestly was balling out and probably a legitimate big reason that the Rams got to where they got, which, by the way, talking about players that people were just shitting on, no pun intended, OBJ was one of those guys, man. I was waiting for him to get out of Cleveland because he was one of those guys I was really rooting for. Like when he won that Super Bowl, man, that like I felt such that gif. I think it's supposed to be like implying something negative, but that person with like their eyes closed and they're looking at, oh, it's Philip Rivers, the Philip Rivers gif.
Yes.
Except like the positive one, right? Like in a positive way. I was like, that was me, like when they won the Super Bowl, and like I know that he injured in the Super Bowl, but prior to that, like that was me. I was excited for the dude. When it's an average athlete, not necessarily an NFL athlete, you say at least 10 months. You say from the surgery date, this is a revision. This is, you know, the same knee. We're going to make it at least 10 months. Yeah. I've been saying that he's probably going to be in a similar position to like to AB. He's going to stay with the Rams, right? Or it's going to be a team that's a contender and has a wide receiver go down, or they feel like they're missing a piece. Like that will be the most likely case for him to come back if he comes back at all in 2022, which isn't even necessarily a lock.
So it's like we're talking maybe December, like
late December.
Okay. Yeah. KJ Hamler.
Oh, KJ Hamler. So I forgot to look into KJ Hamler's surgery date. Do you know what KJ Hamler's surgery date was?
I just had it up. KJ Hamler tore his ACL in September. It was apparently a grade 3. I'm not sure when he had the surgery. Okay. He needed surgery on both the knee and the hip, apparently, which is not good.
Ooh, that's not great. That throws a wrench in things. So what surgery did he have on his hip? Let's look. So KJ Hamler, full speed ahead, 7 months after ACL hip surgeries, May 11th. 2022. So he's 7 months in May, 8 months, 9 months in July. With this hip surgery, I really don't know what to make of that. I'd have to look into what the hip surgery was specifically. So again, obviously this Denver report that I just opened, of course, says he's ahead of schedule. Of course it does. I don't really know what to make of that. I would say safely anticipate 10 months from his surgery date. So 3 months from May, whatever that would be, like August, probably September, just to be safe, because I'd have to look into that a little bit more.
Fair enough. Robert Woods, last one.
Robert Woods, he is on the fence in terms of being ready for week one. He is really, really close. And if you count the 9 months back for Robert Woods, technically he'd be cleared September 1st. Again, that is the soonest plausible time frame. I could see it going both ways. I could see him being ready if it was an isolated ACL by week one, which would put him, 9 months and 10 days, right? Which is like similar to what Burrow did, but Burrow's quarterback. Or I could see it being like the OBJ where he comes back, whatever it was, like 2-3 weeks into the season. But I think that's where we're at with Woods. So again, all these dates that I gave with all these guys, Michael Gallup, mid-November, Robert Woods, early September, John Mechie, September, mid-September. Yeah. I think we talked Robert Tonyan. I know he's not a receiver, but August, like early August, all these guys, these dates that I'm giving you, Jameson Williams, October 13th, those are the soonest. So don't go quoting me. Don't PFF, whoever PFF graphic guy, I know you're listening. I know you're listening, GDI. I know you're looking at this, you're listening. Do not quote me and say that I gave a specific date. These are the soonest possible dates. Could be after, very unlikely to be before.
You mentioned Robert Tonyan being August. Last ACL I have is Logan Thomas, who suffered the injury in December. Sounds like another October potentially.
Logan Thomas. Yeah, man, he came out and actually said like he had ACL, MCL, LCL, and meniscus, which is the meniscus is really what matters there the most. And that really pushes your timeline back. So his surgery was December 17th. So I would not anticipate him back until at least October. I would say October is probably the soonest that we'd see him back. He's going to miss the first month of the season more than likely.
Last one. I feel silly even asking you a little bit. Taysom Hill coming back from a list.
Taysom Hill.
Some people, Edmund, some people are talking themselves in the Taysom Hill tight end experience. Coming off the list, Frank, just in terms of him being healthy, do you think he'll be good to go in training camp?
You're using the some people pretty loosely. Are you pretty insistent on asking this one? Who are these some people?
Hey.
Is this you? Is this Dwayne? I'm not sure. Like,
bro, he goes like in round 14, 15 sometimes. Like, it's ridiculous.
Taysom Hill, right? Wonder boy Taysom Hill. Had a Lisfranc in January. Had the surgery in January. The average return and recovery for a Lisfranc is 9 to 10 months for these guys. 5 to 6 is super optimistic. So he might not even be back until like October. Late October, early November. That's like if you want to call it the floor, like that's the worst case scenario for him. It totally depends on the type of procedure he had and how conservative or aggressive they want to be with his foot. But I think that he was rehabbing right during minicamp. With him, it's going to be, and honestly with all of these guys, what we see with them once they open camp is going to be very indicative of where they'll be by week one. And honestly, like you can reassess at the end of camp. If a dude is purely rehabbing, not doing any on-field stuff during the entire camp period, you can safely assume they're probably not going to be ready for week one. So that would just keep an eye on that one.
Very good rule of thumb. Graphics guy, make sure you just, again, list all these dates out there and say exactly when they're going to come back for Evan.
List the way I butchered those stats I gave earlier on running backs and wide receivers. Like, put that one out there and people will try to read that and still not understand what I was saying. Maybe edit that out. I don't know. Producer, edit that out.
You surpassed my expectations. This was fantastic. Again, people can find you on Twitter at FB Injury Doc. How's the Twins thing going, man? Like, hell, you're doing like real. I mean, I know you were always doing real shit, but like, that's awesome, man. Like, how has it been just like working with the professional sports team doing this stuff?
I'm just grateful, man. Like, it's a dream. Like, it's a dream. Every PT growing up is like, oh, I want to work with athletes. I want to work with professional athletes. Like, I can't complain. It's fun. At the same time, it's like high stakes, right? Like you care about like what you're doing and you understand this is treatment that you're doing is impacting a person's career, individual's career decisions that you're making are going to impact what they do moving forward. And, I haven't been here long enough yet to be like, oh yeah, I helped that dude when he was in minor leagues. Now he's going up to the big leagues, right? Like I've had a little bit of that. I've put my hand in a few things there and then it's super cool to see it on the back end. But yeah, man, like, it's a dream. I can't complain. It's interesting seeing some of these injuries that I talk about in this population now. And then like me being like, oh, that's interesting. Like, maybe I could write about that. Like I'm a nerd, man. So obviously I'm the one who now I sent out the obligatory, like, let's make a fantasy league text to everybody. So I've got a few nibbles. But yeah, man, I'm enjoying it. Thanks for asking.
Fantasy Points medical analyst doing great things alongside friends of the pod, Scott Barrett, Graham Barfield. Injury prone is a lie. You heard from Edwin. Again, subscribe to his newsletter, NFL Injury Updates. As he says, stop scouring Twitter and Google for NFL injury updates and timelines. It is all right here. Again, subscribe to Fantasy Points. You can get all of Edwin's information right there at your fingertips. Anything else you will get off your chest, my friend?
That's it, man. Next time we're here, Dwayne will be here, and I'll ask him about his Girl Scout cookie bookie.
Thank you again, Evan. And thank you out there for listening to another edition of the PFF Fantasy Football Podcast. For Evan, I'm Ian. Thanks as always for tuning in. Until next time, take care, everybody.